You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, free speech is once again in the news. In fact, as listeners know, it's always in the news. So welcome back to the show to Jonathan Ayling, the chief executive, the big kahuna of the Free Speech Union. How are you, Jonathan?
Well, my preferred title is, my preferred pronouns, as it were, is Al Duce, actually. But
No, the Italian, the Italian influence.
I don't believe Mussolini was ever much of a fan of free speech, but yes, no, it does seem we're kind of in a litany of having to deal with one issue after another of standing up for the basic right to be able to have our say freely.
Yeah, well, amongst all the issues flying around at the moment, the Auckland University of Technology, or AUT, is back in the news. There has been a staff survey. The results weren't particularly positive, and yet others in those departments are upset that people feel bullied and have said about bullying people. So perhaps give us the context of what's happening from what you understand, and we'll delve into it a bit deeper.
Very good. Well, yes, of course, this has come from an internal survey at AUT itself. And what is particularly troubling is how closely it corresponds with similar internal surveys that have come out in recent years at other schools as well. So this was particularly within the law school there. And it showed things like 35% of academics there believing that they had been bullied or harassed in the past 6 months, 30% of academics believing that they were unable to raise concerns or voice issues that were occurring within their professional context. And a sum total of 5% of academics at AUT Law School believed that if they spoke up about any of these issues, anything would actually be done about it. So this was almost across the entire faculty there. There were 28 individuals who were invited to partake in the survey. 26 of them did. And so that means what? One, maybe two of all those people said that they actually believed anything would come of raising these issues. And Simon, some of your listeners may say, so what? I'm glad I don't work at AUT Law School. But, across the country, employees and employers have conflict. What has this got to do with the FSU? Free speech enables the rights to academic freedom. And if free speech is not protected in our universities, very soon it won't be protected anywhere. And I don't know that because I have a crystal ball and can look into the future. I know that because I have a high school diploma and can read the past. And that's what they say about Orwell, that Orwell wasn't some prophet who could see what was to come. All he had to do was look at where we'd come from. And if universities and institutions of learning become constrained in their ability to discuss openly issues of importance and relevance to society, these are the individuals we look to in order to move knowledge and in our understanding forward. If they are not able to speak up, that is why the Free Speech Union is so concerned about the state of academic freedom in our nation. And just last year, about 12 months ago, Auckland University Law School did a similar survey and had a very similar set of results. And what we see here, it's a number of issues at play, but certainly chief amongst them are leaders who are hell-bent, as it were, on ruling and suppressing dissenting opinions. And so it is, of course, no surprise whatsoever that issues around sex and gender, issues around the treaty, issues around other contentious identitarian issues are suppressed and silenced. And this is consistent with research that we've done, that other outlets have done. They didn't want to talk about it then. They certainly don't want to talk about it now, that it's their own research that shows this.
So let's just delve into that a little bit before we actually get then to the reaction to this review by Summit AUT. But I think you've touched on a little bit of it, is that the Free Speech Union has done annual surveys of academic freedom, and it's echoing in many ways what this AUT review has come up with. And just to delve into that quickly for listeners, again, AUT's done a survey of its own staff, in this particular case in the law department, and most of them have come back saying, we don't feel as free or as safe. We feel we've been bullied for our views. That, as you're saying, Jonathan, has echoed what the Free Speech Union has seen across our campuses, across our universities. Is that right?
That is correct, and it won't surprise you, Simon. In 2022, we released a report ranking the 8 universities in New Zealand according to their conduct and their policies with respect to free speech and academic freedom. And surprise, surprise, AUT was the only university that we gave an F. It's been very clear to see for quite some time that both structurally and with respect to personalities and how they navigate these situations, they do not, staff there do not have the ability to navigate in the way, not as in the way FSU would like. Who cares what the FSU would like? Not in the way that philosophers opine should occur in a free society. In the way our law requires that it should operate. The Education and Training Act outlines very specifically the academic freedom that is the right of all academics, and it is quite clear that they are not living up to the law. And so my question to the government, and perhaps this is a conversation we'll have in the future, Simon, is what is actually being done to enforce the law and the will of the people that is already in place there. Of course, you're referencing to what happened once this all came to light. And this survey actually occurred several months ago, so it's slightly an old news story. What brought it back to light recently was the fact that after this survey was done and the 95% of those who thought nothing would be done if issues were raised were proved correct when nothing was done, one academic leaked the results. And a senior professor at the law school, a man called Professor Paul Myberg, said that if they didn't like the results, they should leave. Don't let us keep you here. You'll do us a favor by leaving. We'll hold the door open for you so it doesn't hit your ass on the way out, were his words. And I would say,
can I interrupt briefly? Because you're quite right. Again, to situate, there's a review. It gets leaked because there's no action. Again, ironic, isn't it, Jonathan, with a university, particularly in this sort of post-Me Too world, that says, look, if there's bullying or harassment, discrimination, we're going to step in. So the results say there's an issue. When nothing happens, an academic, we don't know who, but leaks the result. And just on that, Professor Myberg, when he reads about it, sends out an email with, as you say, quite derogatory comments, including don't hit your ass on the way out. But why I interrupted you, because at the end of his email, he puts in the words ehoa, as if somehow just putting in that last little bit of Maori words at the end make the abuse okay. So it's quite extraordinary.
It sanitizes it.
Well, it's extraordinary to me, and I suppose I'm not articulating this as well as I want, but at the end of the day, there's accusations of bullying, and then it continues through this professor and others. But anyway, I've interrupted you.
Well, no, that was effectively where I was going to go. If anyone was in doubt, don't let Professor Myberg's response be anything more than a proof as to what our concerns already were. And so from there, we have contacted the dean, the vice chancellor, and the minister, and said this is entirely unacceptable. And I'm hopeful, Simon, that there is a critical mass of concern that is emerging around the state of our universities and the flow on effect into our culture. That hopefully there may be some progress made here. Of course, some of your listeners will be aware of the free speech panel that I sat on at Victoria University earlier in the year, where great outcry and anguish occurred that free speech would be discussed at universities. And then, of course, the New Zealand Initiative, a large think tank based in Wellington, just a few weeks ago produced a major report on academic freedom, echoing the very concerns that we've been raising. The coalition government has referenced this and said that the work must be done. What we need, though, Simon, more than vague references to the issue here, is concrete action and concrete consequences for failing to live up to the duty of universities to sponsor and facilitate these debates. And the coalition agreement between the ACT Party and the National Party did outline that they would progress requirements to require universities to have free speech policies that otherwise they would face funding constraints. But having a free speech policy in itself actually possibly stands to do more harm than good. For example, Victoria University was putting forward a principles of debate, which was going to be their free speech policy, that required individuals to respect the inherent mana of others' opinions. Well, Simon, I don't think your opinions do have mana. You have mana. As an individual, you as a human, you have that dignity and you are worthy of respect. Your opinions, my opinions, are not worthy of respect any more than they are in correct or in line with truth. That is to the extent they should be respected. And if they are not correct or not in line with truth or not factual, then they should be highly disrespected and disregarded. And that is the function of the university, is to help us evaluate that. And so if we end up with free speech policies that have these vague, obtuse references that actually are used to silence debate, the government's own attempts to address the issue by putting in these policies may actually make the situation worse. So the Free Speech Union will be releasing a legislative drafting project that we've been working on for some time in 6 weeks. And this will outline concrete ways that the law can be strengthened to implement consequences for failing to adhere to these requirements.
What it seems to me is a lot of these universities, and actually you're seeing it through codes of conduct and other things, and councils are trying to put certain topics, if you will, beyond the pale. And you touched on some of them earlier. If you want to actually talk about sexuality or gender identity, the Treaty of Waitangi for sure, that you can't really go there. But just jumping back to the AUT side of things as well, to me it's extraordinary that a university that speaks so much about an anti-bullying dynamic continues to actually be doing that. I mean, I don't want to, well, I can just pick on that one professor. I mean, the what he's written in terms of his fellow colleagues is bordering, on my view, on abusive. And yet the university appears to be doing, well, so far nothing, although you've indicated you've written to the university and to the minister.
Yes, that's right. And I would say this is gaslighting. It's a, well, you have some concerns here. Well, we're not keeping you here. We'll just jog on if you're that weak. If you can't stand up being in a robust academic environment, the problem is with you. Certainly not with any sort of structure or environment that suppresses dissenting opinions. Look, I would say that it's quite consistent, Simon, that the very people that call for censorship, that call for hate speech laws, that highlights the problems of structural issues. I mean, I hesitate to remind your listeners again that the dean of the AUT Law School, the woman who is now at the head of an organisation in this strife, is the same woman who has just led a review of the New Zealand Police Force that has condemned the New Zealand Police Force as irredeemably structurally racist. And I think for whatever differences the Free Speech Union has had with Mark Mitchell over his tenure as the Minister of Police, good on him for standing up against that, calling out the nonsense, because it is the very people that sound this alarm that are often the very worst perpetrators. And of course, going back to previous conversations that you and I have had, illustration 395 would be Chloe Swarbrick going on about the need for hate speech laws and then leading chants that in any context would be described as hateful speech. So I'll leave that there. Hypocrisy runs deep within the camp of those who want to silence the rest of us. And I think there need to be consequences for individuals like Kylie Quince, who is the dean there, for her failure to lead these organisations appropriately.
Well, let's talk about actually Kylie Quince for a while, or for a moment, because as you say, she's the dean of this law school at AUT, which is saying, or rather members of her own faculty are saying, we feel bullied, we feel harassed, we don't feel we can speak freely. Because if memory serves me right, I think it was at that debate, discussion, whatever you want to call it, contrived panel in the end.
Ambush, Victoria, I think is the word I'm
ambush. You survived then, that's a good thing. But was she not there saying that basically free speech is a colonial concept or something like that? I mean, you were there, so talk us through this viewpoint of this supposed, well, she is the dean, but the dean of a law school, which is
facilitating. Is what I think we could say.
Yeah, let's say that. But yeah, talk us through what she had to say about free speech.
I would say that entire saga was entirely contrived and shifted because of the outcry that a vice chancellor would sponsor a conversation on free speech, shifted from being a panel discussion on free speech in universities to being a panel discussion about identity politics. And identity politics, Simon, this sounds a little bit obtuse. I hope I don't bore your audience, but it's really quite important to understand. Identity politics completely illegitimizes free speech and suppresses free speech. And as soon as we shift away from the smallest and most important minority being the individual, where each of us then get to have a voice and we get to dissent, no matter what our composite identities are, of course, we are all made up of different identities, and those identities and connection to those communities matter. But what matters far more is us as individuals, how we take form with those identities and move forward. And as soon as you are defined by being Maori before anything else, or you're defined by being gay before anything else, or you're defined by being Muslim before anything else, all of these were identities that were present on this panel. What it is to say is that there is a Muslim view, or there is a Maori view, or there is a gay view on what these topics are. And really, of course, there's in-group variation in all these groups, and there is no consensus, apart from even within ourselves. And I change my mind before midday most days of the week. And so what I would say there is, what we were up against was this idea of whether individuals should be free to think and speak freely, or whether identities should be dominated by prevailing elites who then decide what everyone under them thinks and feels about the subject. And Kylie Quince was obviously there as a prevailing elite of the Rainbow Māori community, advocating for the suppression of anyone who disagrees with her under those auspices. And her narrative was that free speech is the product of a Christian God, a capitalist ethic, an imperial narrative, and an individualized self-manifestation. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that last bit means. I'll let your listeners decide. But I think she's getting at, actually, what I've just been saying here, the fundamental belief that once we stop believing that individuals are the base agent of society, we end up with authoritarianism. That is the only alternative. And authoritarianism means we have violence. If we start deciding that groups prevail over individuals, we have to keep those groups in line. And then we have to silence people. And if we can't silence them, we have to get them fired from their jobs, or get them excluded from public venues, or get them shut down on street corners, or barring that, actually punch them in the face, knock them in the street, kick them in the guts, and cut
pour tomato juice over their head and celebrate it. I mean, it's quite extraordinary from a dean of a law school to say that free speech is some sort of Western colonial imperialistic concept. I mean, in many ways, that, without making listeners think or feel a certain way, I mean, we should be deeply worried about that. I mean, this is a person in a position of enormous power, drawing quite a large amount of taxpayer money, who is ultimately saying she doesn't believe in free speech.
Well, and I feel like we have a list of assaults that Kylie Quince has made against free speech recently, but another would be, this is the same woman who said of Gary Judd, one of the great legal actors in our country, a very well-respected lawyer, she said with respect to his claims around Mātauranga Māori that he's an old dinosaur and should go die in a corner. And really, there is this great vehemence. It is a hatred for those who disagree with her on these issues, and an underlying kind of a perennial condoning of some form of violence again. And I want to be really clear. We stood up in that moment and said Kylie Quinn should have every right to say what she said. Because I would much rather know if a dean of a law school holds these sorts of what I perceive as vile opinions. And so I agree. I don't think it's overstating it to say we should be concerned that the leaders of the institutions that we pay for have such disdain and contempt for the very basic freedoms that have built up the structures that they now govern, and the people which those freedoms and liberties protect.
Again, I just find it extraordinary because, you know, the journey to the free speech that we hold today, the principles of free speech and operating democracy and so forth, we sort of a bloody history, to put it really simply, that has led us here. And then I just use the word extraordinary, that despite all of that, to this moment where we are freely expressing, debating, democratically teasing out ideas, we have someone at the head of a law school, amongst others, more than happy, I would argue, to go back to a feral, tribal, identity politics driven collective. I know it's lots of words for listeners, but it's very destructive. I suppose that's what I'm trying to get at, Jonathan, is we came out of a destructive world to build the one we have today, and yet there are people like this Kylie Quince trying to rush us back. It's just beyond crazy.
Violence is unavoidable unless we find a way of protecting these basic liberties. And I want to be very clear when I say that and disavow violence entirely. Again, violence is the antithesis of free speech. It's not that I would participate in that, that's a threat or anything. It is simply to recognize that the default of humanity is not the peace and prosperity and stability that we have known in countries like New Zealand. The default of humanity has been, if you live next to someone who has a different god or a different political ethic or is a different color, to simply kill them. That is how humanity has, for the vast majority of history, acted, and how still huge portions of the globe act. And so let us reason carefully and count the cost and decide whether that is really what we want to return to, or whether free speech is complicated and difficult and it requires sacrifice and work, but it is a far better alternative to anything else that's on offer.
I think you've articulated it far better than I was trying to. Again, that's what they want to go back to, is actually a violence. And you and I are both very strong believers in free speech and hate violence. You know, that's an absolute underpinning. But I suppose one striking element, as we've talked about these different personalities, is as they speak against free speech, they are also promoting violence. So Kylie Quince talking about Gary Judd going outside and dying, this Paul Myberg, or, you know, wanting to hit people on the door on the way out. Can think of another woman who's just got a doctorate at Auckland Uni, being celebrated in the Herald. I think it's Emmy Rakete, who a few years ago basically tweeted death threats at the likes of Bob McCoskrie. Oh, I'm just struck by the violence already in their language, by the very people who are always talking about how language is harmful. Do they not look in the mirror, Jonathan, is probably what I'm trying to ask.
No, there is an unavoidable hypocrisy. I don't mean to be obtuse, Simon, just for the sake of clarity for your audience. Paul
Myers, this is the third time you've used the word obtuse. I mean, we're for free speech, but you just keep going.
Paul Myberg was saying he wanted to hold the door so it didn't hit people on the ass on the way out. And I would suggest that's probably not to the same scale as what Emmy Rakete or Kylie Quince have said. So, but I accept the general point that there is consistent among those who want to suppress free speech to embrace violence. And I think the reason for that is very obvious, as I've already said, because what they want to do is have the power to control others. And in order to do that, in order to keep them in line, what do they say? Talk quietly and carry a big stick. And that's what they really want to be able to do.
Well, to finish up, I'm going to throw a curveball of a sort, because this morning on the show we are talking around Victoria University and the recent study that's come to light. And it's my summary here, but of normalising paedophilia, of all things, through a series of questions. So just, very quickly, your take, the free speech unions take, particularly in a view of academic freedom, even in something that's distasteful, what are your thoughts?
Simon, this is an incredibly important issue, and I hope your listeners will listen to my whole answer. I think in order for us to be a mature society, we need to be able to hold two things in our hands at once. And so can we hold an absolute condemnation of pedophilia as criminal and as harmful and as simply grotesque, and also hold the right for academics to ask questions? The Free Speech Union would say that academics have a very important function in our society to really ask any question. And we have faculties of criminology to understand stuff that we're not trying to normalize, that we're not trying to advocate for or present as normal, but that we need to understand as a society. So I think absolutely studies should be able to be conducted on pedophilia. Studies should be conducted on the way society perceives pedophilia. I don't think there's a problem in that itself. There are two issues, though, with what's happened at Victoria University, or three, really, if I might add on a third. that I think we can clearly condemn. The first is just the inconsistency and the hypocrisy that we've already been discussing here that's at play. Make the claim that Maori didn't cede sovereignty and watch the walls of a university fall in on you, but present a study that is looking at how to normalize pedophilia, and well, that's just academic freedom. So there's this real inconsistency here, and so I would say that's a big part of it. I think these questions should be allowed to be asked by virtue of the same, in the same way other questions that are currently opposed should also be able to be asked. I would also say that there's a real difference between research and advocacy, and trying to understand what the state of play is and what the reality is with respect to this in a scientific and objective empirical way is quite different to looking for strategies to presenting sexual deviancy in a way that is then normalized. And I don't know whether that's happening or not, so I'll let others seek that out. But if that is the case, that is quite different to research. The third point, and it's kind of connected to that there, is as far as I know, as journalists and others, perhaps like yourself, have tried to understand what is going on here, they have been stonewalled and have not been able to really access information to help people understand what this is actually all about. And I would suggest that if this was being done in a transparent, open-minded, scientific, empirical way that was just about research, they would probably have gotten back to your questions much quicker. So it then confirms many of the concerns I think many already hold with respect to what the true purpose actually is here. And freedom of expression guarantees the right for access to information. And universities are publicly funded. They are accountable to the people of the day, where sovereignty in a nation rests within the expression of the will of the people. And if universities are leading people up the garden path, trying to shield some of their activities from transparency, there will be a price to pay before too long, I hope.
Yeah, well, look, thank you for that. As I say, sort of a final question coming out of left field, but having been quite a discussion today already, it was good to get your take on it. And thanks for the nuances as well. I suppose my only quick observation is, I think it was your first one, it's the extraordinary hypocrisy, or the very, probably is still remains hypocrisy, but it's the very inconsistent, that's the word I'm grappling for, the inconsistent approach. Some topics, I love it, the walls will fall down around you, threaten to lose your job, etc. Others, oh no, it's fine.
It's duplicitous, and ultimately I think inherent within that duplicity is deceit and manipulation. And so I think we should be able to call it out. And again, it comes down to the real lack of leadership at our universities, that I think the universities almost single-handedly have a lot to answer for the course over the past 30 or 40 years that we've taken. And sorry, Simon, not to go over here, but just the question that I get asked often, and perhaps some of your listeners have this, is how has this all happened so quickly? And I would say social change happens slowly, 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 and then happens all at once. And I think we're kind of in the all at once now, but let's not think it was all Jacinda Ardern's fault or all happened over the past 6 years. Really, this has been happening for decades now.
Completely agree. In fact, it's probably another discussion for another day, and probably a greater reach than I've got. I'd love to get a guy called Niall Ferguson, who you'll know of on the show, a Scottish thinker, philosopher, writer, historian. He's really big into this notion that history is moving faster now. Things that in the past would have taken 100 years can now happen very, very rapidly. And I have to say, as someone who's much more conservative, I find that rapid change very disconcerting. But it's also something, isn't it, for our society at large to know that it's happening fast today, but this, particularly in the academic space, is something that's been brewing for, what, about 60, 70 years almost, wasn't it, from the 1950s and 60s with the Frankfurt School of Thought and so on that we've touched on before.
That's right.
Well, Jonathan, I will leave it. Look, thank you amongst so many things of bringing good, bold words like duplicity in. I think too many years of me doing diplomatic work of a sort has affected my ability to speak, which is ironic for a show called Speak Freely. But look, thank you so much for coming on and talking us through all you're doing. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Thanks very much.
So everyone, that was Jonathan Aileen, the Chief Executive of the Free Speech Union here in New Zealand.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.